We take a look at the week in national politics. The Justice Department is seeking a shorter prison sentence than its own prosecutors had recommended for former Trump campaign consultant Roger Stone, raising concerns from some in Congress about political interference in the justice system. And in election news, Democratic candidates held their second primary contest last night in New Hampshire. Senator Bernie Sanders came out on top, former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg came in second, and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar in third. You can join in with your thoughts on the primary campaign at 800-642-1234. If you're planning to vote Democratic, what are you looking at to decide which candidate you'll vote for? Who are you leaning toward? Would you vote for the nominee, the Democratic nominee, no matter who it might be? If you're a supporter of President Trump, what do you think he should emphasize in his campaign? If you're somewhere in the middle, what's going to determine who gets your vote? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Scott Wong is a senior reporter at The Hill focusing on House leadership. Scott, good to have you back.
Good to be back, Rob.
Before we dig into the first couple results, Iowa and New Hampshire, some context. The two states so far have awarded 64 delegates out of more than 4,000 overall. So still a long way to go, right?
Yeah, there's still a lot of runway in this. But I think we have a little bit of clarity after these two contests. We know that the left is rallying behind Bernie Sanders. I think there had been some question as to who would be the progressive candidate to emerge out of this field. Would it be Bernie or Elizabeth Warren? Seems to be Bernie has the momentum despite that setback with a heart attack last year. And then, of course, a couple surprises. Pete Buttigieg, a relatively unknown politician a year or two ago, winning in Iowa and getting second place in New Hampshire and going neck and neck with Bernie Sanders in terms of the delegate count. We saw Klobuchar hanging tough, which was another surprise, and we saw a number of other candidates drop out and disappointing nights for, as I mentioned, both Elizabeth Warren and also Vice President Joe Biden.
Let's give a listen to Senator Bernie Sanders talking at his victory speech last night, calling for unity no matter who ends up winning this thing.
No matter who wins, and we certainly hope it's going to be us, we are going to unite together. We are going to unite together and defeat the most dangerous president in the modern history of this country.
This is a point of concern, Scott, among some in the Democratic Party that Bernie Sanders supporters might not unite around a not Bernie Sanders candidate and vice versa. What are people talking about?
Well, these are the endangered, vulnerable Democrats, many of whom won flipped Republican-held House seats last cycle in 2018 that helped hand the Democrats the majority of the House of Representatives. They are sounding the alarm about a possible Bernie Sanders nomination. People like Dean Phillips of Minnesota and Scott Peters of San Diego, who are saying if we nominate Bernie Sanders, there will be consequences up and down the Democratic ticket. We could not only hand the White House back to Donald Trump for another 4 years, it could even cost us the House majority, putting all power back in the hands of the Republican Party. So a lot of heartburn, a lot of consternation among some of these moderate members who are backing people like Amy Klobuchar or Pete Buttigieg or Joe Biden.
Let's give a listen now to Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, finishing in a strong third place, kind of surging at the right time, people have said. Here's some of her talking last night as results came in.
Donald Trump's worst nightmare is that the people in the middle, the people who have had enough of the name calling and the mudslinging, have someone to vote for in November.
And that question of the middle there and that lane of the Democratic Party, you mentioned Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, both senators on the more progressive lane. Now we've got Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar competing for that, I don't know if you call it centrist, but more traditional Democratic Party liberal lane, and Joe Biden slipping away. And that's what a lot of people are watching for, right? Who is going to emerge in that lane as the main candidate?
That's exactly right. And it remains crowded still, despite these two contests in Iowa and New Hampshire. And that's why you have not seen any of those big names drop out yet, because Biden has made the calculation that he will do well in South Carolina and on Super Tuesday as the contest shifts more towards the South and the West, with African-American voters, which he plays very well with, and Hispanic voters. And so there's a real question as to what happens now. Does Biden continue to lose momentum even with some of these voters who he considers his base because of his disappointing finish in Iowa and New Hampshire? I mean, fifth place is really bad. It was so bad that he didn't even stick around for the results and got the heck out of there and flew to South Carolina, and where he held a rally with and met with some of his supporters in South Carolina. Obviously, the other big elephant in the room is Michael Bloomberg, who has vowed to spend as much as $1 billion of his own money to defeat Donald Trump. He is up on the airwaves everywhere you can imagine, and he really is the wild card in this race, and there's a lot of chatter and a lot of buzz about him.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill, looking at the big news in national politics right now, focusing in on the Democratic primary campaign so far. Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Julie is with us in Ashland. Julie, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Julie?
I just wanted to talk about why my support is still very strong for Bernie Sanders.
Why is that?
Well, he's been the most consistent in his analysis. He's never varied. He's authentic. But the main reason that I support him is because I have spent a couple of trips in Sweden, which is a democratic socialist country. And I think that's the model that he's working from. And I think the fact that President Trump's new budget, which just came out, decreases Medicaid, Medicare, and tries to get rid of Obamacare, and then increases the aid to the military and for more nuclear weapons, shows how wrong his priorities are.
Julie, thanks a lot for the call. And Senator Bernie Sanders, Scott, has a pretty loyal base of supporters coming into this, even from the campaign 4 years ago. Is that that's looks like it's helping him so far, doesn't it?
Well, certainly in a state like New Hampshire. I mean, he represents Vermont, so people in neighboring New Hampshire were very familiar with him. They've known him for decades, ever since he was the mayor of Burlington. And of course, it also, you know, what his people will say. I spoke to AOC, the congresswoman from New York, yesterday. She is a big Bernie supporter. She campaigned with him on that last day before the primary. And she said that, you know, what it's going to take to sort of counter these centrist moderate Democrats who are worried about a Bernie Sanders nomination. She said what it's going to take to defeat Donald Trump will be a revolution. And the revolution, this liberal revolution, is behind Bernie Sanders at this moment in time. And so that's her sort of counterpoint to some of the concerns from the more centrist members of her own party.
We've got a few people who have left the crowded field, Deval Patrick, Andrew Yang, and Michael Bennett. None of them really seemed to register in the first couple of states. What did we see from them?
Yeah, I mean, I think out of all of those, Andrew Yang had the most fervent following, obviously one of the first Asian-American major presidential candidates who really, you know, really appealed to people, to the outsiders. He was not a politician. He didn't come up through the ranks. He was a businessman who appealed to even some Trump supporters. Now, the question I think that a lot of us are asking in Washington is, can he bring some of those Trump supporters that were backing him over back to the Democratic Party? You know, how hard will he campaign for the nominee? He says he wants to defeat Donald Trump. And so it'll be interesting to see where the Yang gang ends up in the general election.
Let's take another call on the Democratic race. Stacy is with us in Janesville. Stacy, hello.
Hi.
Hi, where are you leaning in the race so far, if at all?
I'm leaning towards Bernie Sanders. I have a child with cerebral palsy, and I'm worried that, you know, as much as I supported the Affordable Care Act when it came out, there's been a lot of Republican attacks trying to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. I think really what we need is legislation to show that health care is a human right, which is something that Bernie has been talking about consistently. And I think that, you know, I just want to make sure that people like my son who have cerebral palsy, were, you know, he didn't choose his disability, but even people who, you know, became disabled as adults will always have access to health care.
Stacey, thanks for the call. She's saying Bernie Sanders for the reason of health care. Scott, do you see candidates focusing a lot on health care in the primary and expect to see that in the general election as well?
Yeah, especially for the Democratic Party. I mean, they have made health care their number one issue, both in terms of House candidates that ran and flipped Republican seats in the 2018 election, as well as what we're going to be seeing going forward in the 2020 election. Now, you know, obviously Donald Trump is going to be on the ballot, and that will be hard for candidates, especially Democratic candidates, to ignore, especially following this weeks or months long impeachment trial that we've just wrapped up here. But, you know, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats will be talking about health care going forward. They think that's a winning issue for them. It proved to be so in 2018 when they were able to take back the House.
Scott Wong is with us from the Hill for our weekly look at the big news in national politics. We've got another caller now on the Democratic primary. Yordis is with us in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I was just thinking that Bernie Sanders has a kind of cult-like following. Some of the people that follow him won't vote for anyone but him. And I think that's really dangerous. And also, I think his ideas are what matter. And Elizabeth Warren has very similar ideas, if not exactly similar, and she has great plans. And she's also much more welcoming. She's not, you know, yelling at the audience. She's has a warmth that really appeals to me. And I'm really concerned that it's kind of a dichotomy of alienating a whole bunch of people to have Bernie Sanders as the presidential candidate.
Scott, Yordis, thanks for the call. Scott, that is a concern among not just Yordis, but some other Democrats.
Yeah, it's a concern. Well, it's going to be a concern for Democrats no matter who the nominee is, given today's Democratic Party. If it's Bernie Sanders, there will be centrists that probably will be turned off and who think Bernie is too liberal for their tastes. If it's somebody like a Pete Buttigieg or Joe Biden, even though that appears unlikely at this moment, there's a real question as to whether the Bernie people will turn out in the election, or will they simply be too disenchanted with the status quo and stay at home. That's something that we saw during the 2016 election when Hillary Clinton was selected as a nominee. A lot of the Bernie people were not motivated enough to get behind Clinton, and obviously that mattered in states like Michigan and Wisconsin, where that vote was extremely close and where it went for Donald Trump.
Thanks for that call. We'll take one more caller before we move on to the rest of the stuff going on in the country. Maureen is with us in Mineral Point. Maureen, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Maureen?
I was a Bernie delegate in 2016 and contributed a significant amount of money to his campaign. But this time around, I'm behind Klobuchar and Buttigieg. I'm kind of flipping between the two of them.
What led you to make that switch from Sanders to one of those two candidates?
Well, I still believe that Sanders could have won in 2016 in the general. But this time around, I think the mood of the country has changed quite a bit. And I just don't believe that the majority of people are ready for Medicare for All and free college. And I think a lot of voters will stay home if that's the option. I'll vote for Bernie, certainly, if he's the nominee. But I think the mood of the country has changed enough that that most people are looking for a little something more moderate. And I like the way that both Klobuchar and Buttigieg really try to build bridges to people of all flavors.
Maureen, thanks a lot for the call. Scott, before we move on from the issue, Maureen, in a soul-searching moment, it sounds like, trying to figure out what's going to work best for Democrats and a lot of people in a similar position all over the country as we go up to South Carolina and Nevada and the rest coming up.
Well, and I think this idea of electability is weighing on a lot of people's minds. A lot of Democrats know that they want to see Donald Trump removed from the White House. You know, they don't necessarily love the moderate candidates, but a lot of them are shifting to this idea that if you have a moderate running against Donald Trump, there's a better chance to beat him in the November election. However, he does have his highest approval ratings yet of his presidency in this past week following acquittal in the Senate. The economy is strong, and so he does have the wind at his back, and he has the power of incumbency.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill about the big news in national politics. Scott, yeah, you had written about a big week for President Trump, but that takes us up to the news now over the last couple of days about former Trump campaign operative Roger Stone, convicted of lying to Congress, obstruction of justice, and witness tampering. Federal prosecutors recommended a prison sentence of 7 to 9 years. Now, the Justice Department intervened to seek a much shorter sentence. Can you walk us through what's happened so far?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like just when President Trump had wrapped up his impeachment process and put that aside and gotten past that, he walked in right into another controversy. And so, you know, after these, after the DOJ and specifically Bill Barr moved to reduce Roger Stone's case recommend against what the four prosecutors had recommended, which was 7 to 9 years in prison, that came after tweets from President Trump, who had been complaining that the Roger Stone sentencing guidelines were of 7 to 9 years were too stringent, too tough. And so the concern now is from both Democrats and Republicans alike on Capitol Hill that the appearance, at least, is that it looks like the president is interfering in the sentencing of one of his key allies, Roger Stone, who was an informal advisor on his presidential campaign and whom he has known for decades, really. And so what you heard today was this chorus of criticism, mostly from Republican lawmakers, including Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, even Lindsey Graham, Trump's steadfast ally, who called the interference not appropriate. Typically, there is sort of this division between the president and the Justice Department, although it is his administration's Justice Department. But he's not supposed to interfere in specific cases and make recommendations about specific sentencing, especially when it pertains to one of his closest allies.
And we learned this afternoon, and I think we saw it on your Twitter feed, Scott, that Attorney General Barr has agreed to testify for the House Judiciary Committee on March 31st. That's been it's a ways away, and it's been a long time coming for Democrats on that committee. What would you anticipate happening at a hearing like that?
Well, the Democrats, led by Jerry Nadler of New York, certainly will want to question Bill Barr about the backstory of how this decision to reduce the sentencing for Roger Stone was arrived at. Did the president make a phone call? The president says he did not make a phone call, but what type of pressure did the president exert on the Justice Department and Attorney General Barr? You know, it's interesting. This was all coming from the Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler that Bill Barr is going to appear. As you mentioned, we are still many, many weeks away. I wonder if we actually will see Bill Barr on Capitol Hill for this hearing. He has not been particularly cooperative with House Democrats in the past, and I have a hard time believing that he's willing to all of a sudden change his tune and cooperate with them now.
And is there any talk of oversight on the Senate side of things with this latest news about Attorney General Barr and the Roger Stone case?
No, just a lot of huffing and puffing. But, you know, in terms of actual teeth, the Judiciary Chairman, who happens to be Lindsey Graham, as I mentioned earlier, has said he does not need to hear from Bill Barr, although he has been critical of these recent developments of the last 24 hours. So if the oversight is going to happen, it's going to happen from House Democrats who control those committees in the House of Representatives. But as I mentioned before, you know, the Trump administration has not been particularly cooperative with the House Democrats in the past.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Scott Wong, senior reporter for The Hill. He joined us for our look at the week in Washington.